Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva. I am back after these two have completely taken over the show and did whatever they did last week. I haven't had a chance to listen to most of the episode, but there are a couple things we need to talk about.
Wait, you only listened to partial amounts of your own show?
So angry.
Well, because we did have two episodes that dropped last week due to faulty equipment.
Mostly him.
Whatever.
Him. Oh, he calls himself faulty equipment. Spencer, it is noted.
With me, as always, is the wonderful, germ-free, still running strong Mr. Spencer King George Williams.
You know what? I like that character, so that's fine.
Also with us, returning the musical queen herself and member of the Capeless Crusaders, Miss Amy LaBelle, going by Fury of the Small for some reason in her Zoom chat.
It's a D&D joke, but also I appreciate it. And I'm still an intern. Did my paperwork get through to HR yet?
We never said we'd hire her on as an intern. This is
no,
all still.
No, you agreed to an intern.
No,
you
we didn't.
Agreed to an internship.
No, there's no paperwork for that at all.
We have
a great and exciting show for you, as we're going to be discussing Disney Plus's recently released big feature thing to be released out of Disney Plus since Artemis Fowl. And that is Hamilton, the musical. So we're excited to talk about it and really dig into that. But before we do, Spencer, give him that wonderful, all that awesome stuff.
Okay, your wordage today is very odd. But everyone stuff. Else, turn in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
You know, one of the things I did want to mention about last week's episode, it's interesting.
The one Spencer you didn't listen to all the way.
Oh, I listened to the parts that were interesting. No, just... No,
so much rage.
I listened to it, but there was a couple things that I'm like, come on. Like, there was a point where Spencer asked a very unique question of, are there any other sci-fi musicals out there? And all we got out of this was like three. One that
four.
Nobody... You only said three.
I said four.
You said...
Rocky.
Rocky Horror, Xanadu.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Starlight Express.
But you said that now. You said that
no.
just a little bit ago.
No, I didn't.
You forgot one of the best
I'm sorry.
And biggest
you
ones.
You haven't listened
you
to
You forgot
them.
The best and biggest one that started in the small one. In the small screen on streaming and made a really big impact, and that is Dr. Horrible Sing Along.
Oh,
there's
Dr.
not a stage
Horrible's
production
great.
Of Dr. Horrible.
Is it not a musical? He didn't ask for theater, he asked for musicals. You betrayed Neil Patrick Harris. How dare you?
Well,
but it's okay.
I appreciate
you know,
him
just,
in Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
It's interesting
in
how that
Sweeney
was completely
Todd.
Forgotten. I'm going to mute her.
Yeah, there's nothing like people talking over each other in an audio experience.
Exactly.
There's so much rage, you guys.
It
I'm
was,
sorry.
It would almost feel, it's almost like, you know, just so much noise.
You but, mean from you? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, from you. But we got a great show in store as, like we said, we're going to be discussing the recently dropped Hamilton the musical on Disney Plus. Now, obviously, Disney is not really hitting it with the home runs in terms of their releases on their streaming service, because as we stated with the release right before that, which was Artemis Fowl, we had a very... We had a very interesting conversation. You can check out that episode on our website at filmlosophers.com. I forget what lesson that was, but that was a pretty disheartening conversation. I was expecting more out of that, just saying. Oh, sad is the bare surface of how I felt with that movie. But this movie, this musical, which obviously it was created for Broadway, for the stage, and was then filmed over the course of certain days at the height of what was going on for that production, and then created into a film for home viewing consumption, made its way through the procurement of Disney. I think Amy, you and I had conversations about this, how Disney actually paid $75 million for Hamilton, for the rights to Hamilton and to put it on its platform. So they paid a pretty penny. And I don't know, we're going to have this conversation to see if it paid off or not. So before we dive into it, Spencer, give us that official musical synopsis goodness.
Hamilton is the story of America then, told by America now, which is a sentence that is true for pretty much any historical piece. Featuring a score that blends hip-hop, jazz, R&B, and Broadway, Hamilton has taken the story of American founding father Alexander Hamilton and created a revolutionary moment in theater, a musical that has had a profound impact in culture, politics, and education.
I already know where the direction of this conversation's going. I love the fact that knowing Spencer's voice, I'm knowing exactly where his thoughts are so far.
Okay, when we get already to the part where we're asking each other about our thoughts, I want you to tell me what you think my opinion is.
Okay. Well, before we get to that, with the film, the musical actually, with music and lyrics by Lin-Manuel Miranda, direction by Thomas Kail, and based on Ron Chernow's acclaimed biography, the musical slash film features an ensemble cast that includes David Diggs, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Jonathan Groff, Christopher Jackson, Jasmine Cephas Jones, Lin-Manuel, obviously, Leslie Odom Jr., Okiarte Anuaduanan, Anthony Ramos, and Philippa So.
Also known as Pippa Sue.
Pippa who?
They called her Pippa.
Filmed over the course of 3 days in June of 2016, they actually started filming at a live Sunday matinee performance with cameras in the audience, after which the cast and crew spent the rest of the day and evening filming close-ups, dolly shots, and crane shots. Filming then continued all day Monday, which is normally the cast day off, but they came in to do that for all the close-ups and Steadicam footage, and then more filming took place on Tuesday morning before shooting another live performance on Tuesday evening with cameras again in the audience, but in different positions. So this whole thing, even though it took over the course, even though it's a stage play, the filming itself took 3 days, three full days of shooting, which if you think about it, the cast had to be exactly in all the right positions for all the right places for every single role. So that's pretty impressive, seeing as this was going to make some debut at one point in time. And interestingly enough, Amy actually has this huge chip on her shoulder with, what is it, Broadway.com?
Broadway HD.
No. The company that actually owns all those or has all those
Broadway.
rights.
Broadway.com.
Broadway.com.
Broadway HD is their streaming platform.
But
Rage.
Amy has this huge conspiracy theory about how Broadway.com has access to all these musicals and nobody will ever get to see them until like 20, 30 years later.
They literally just released Sunday in the Park with George with Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters. That was like the 70s or the 80s. Like, this is mean. This is mean. Mean.
Yeah, no, I kind of got that from even Hamilton itself, because like this was filmed in 2016 and originally this was supposed to release next year. And I'm like, why? Yep. Like, why not just release it like when you have the rights and your streaming service is working? It seems really odd.
Well,
they clearly didn't have anything else to release.
Money.
Well, I mean, the honest truth is that people are spending close to $300 a ticket to go. Well, and over $300 and above per ticket to go see this. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure Disney was hoping to do something massive, and with everything going on, what better way to bridge the American unity gap than by, you know, releasing one of the most prolific musicals in political history on the stage.
Well, also, let's be in kind of light of that. I can fairly certain say that they were planning a theatrical release first.
Oh, no doubt.
Wow.
And in being able to do that, not only would have they drummed up additional merchandise as well as ticket sales, because if you can spend $15 to see the original Broadway cast, yeah, you're going to do it.
Well, and how many times will you be able to return and go and see it again and again and again? Mm-hmm. You're easily going to have at least a 2-3 month box office lifespan, mm-hmm, where people are going to be coming almost every day, if not every other day, spending $15 to $20 a pop per person, each theater filling out about 200 seats. You're looking at 200 times 20. That's $400 every showing. You're looking at about 10 to 15 showings every day. That's bank. That is bank, to say the least. Not to mention all the weekend showings, which they up those to 20 showings usually in the round, in the roundabouts. But nevertheless, it was released. We got to see it. We're going to talk about it.
Woo.
Another little piece of information. This is actually the second live taping of a Broadway musical Disney has released following Disney's Newsies, the Broadway musical, back in 2017.
Newsies today.
Which Amy is familiar with. Which, it's actually a really great musical. It's on...
on Disney Plus.
Well, it was the one that was previously before Disney Plus was on Netflix, similar to last week's conversation, Shrek the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
But now, because of the, you know, House of Mouse powering over everything, they now have procured back their property and are having it on Disney Plus. But it was also the Broadway musical of Newsies was also filmed with members of both the Broadway and touring cast, which it prominently had... Jeremy Jordan, one of the most infamous characters or actors of that cast, in the role of.
Oh my gosh.
Huh?
Jack.
There you go.
Sorry, because I went, my brain. So Jeremy Jordan is very well known in most Broadway circles, not just for his range, but for the behind the scenes stuff when Hugh Jackman was still recovering from his surgery for The Greatest Showman. He actually was at the pitch meeting and was singing for Hugh Jackman. So you can actually see him doing that. He's been in NBC's Smash. He's Quinn on CW Supergirl. He is a voice actor for the Tangled series. He plays a character there, and that's where my brain went when you said Jeremy Jordan. So, yeah, he's been around a bit.
So, right now, because I know this was information that you guys gave last week, so I'm going to kind of continue that with information about this particular musical. This musical actually currently holds the record for most Tony Award nominations with 16 nominations. And it actually went home with 11 wins, including Best Actor in the Musical, Best Original Score, even Best Musical. It was actually one short of the record, which was 12, which was achieved through the producers. So the producers actually hold the record currently for most wins in a single night. But
way to be Mel Brooks.
Yeah. But it's still, that's still an enormous feat in itself. I mean, honestly, with how great... a production of Hadestown was. I'm surprised Hadestown didn't actually kind of rival that. But now that we've seen it, now that we've had an opportunity to experience in some way the phenomenon that is Hamilton, I can see why it's gotten a lot of that attention. But I'm interested in having this discussion because, like I mentioned earlier, one of the great things about Spence and I in our relationship is I love... I love how Spence gives himself away at certain times when he's talking about something leading up to the conversation. And it's always fun. And apparently I'm going to test that theory, because Spence wants me to say what I thought. What do you want me to do?
I want you to tell me what you think I thought of the movie.
Oh, after the movie?
Thought of it.
Okay. I'll do that after we talk about expectations going in.
Okay.
So
that's kind of cheating.
How is that cheating?
Because he's going to give his expectations and a bit of his impression within his expectation, therefore giving you a hint.
Because one of the great things about Spence actually lives with a really great guy. His name's Philip. Philip is a huge musical nerd. In fact, Philip has actually been to a live performance of Hamilton, among other great musicals. And so I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you mentioned to Philip that you were going to be doing this review.
No.
Oh, okay. But the fact is that I'm pretty sure you've heard stuff from Philip. I'm pretty sure you've heard things from around people. What were some of the expectations for you, Spence, coming into like watching this? Like, what was some of the things that were going through your mind?
Mostly, I just wanted to know why everyone was talking about this. Why were jokes about having tickets to Hamilton in The Good Place? Why was everyone talking about this show? So I was actually kind of interested to see, you know, what all the hype was about.
Okay.
I like that you made a Good Place reference for that. I was like, I almost forgot for a second. I was like, oh, shoot. That's right.
What about you, Amy? Because I know you're already well within the musical, you know, community. You're very much about being aware, obviously, aware of a lot of the musicals that are out there and a lot of the impact certain musicals have had on the history of theater. One of the things I want to ask you in terms of this is, what were some of the concerns that you had about this one? Because it's easy to have the positive expectations, but for somebody who is well inclined to know things about musicals, what were some of the things that you were worried about that this may fall into, like those pitfalls that it may fall into?
So usually the one thing that a little bit with the expectations, I actually didn't know this was a sung through. So the entirety of this show is sung through. And initially listening to the music, I kind of had that expectation a little bit that we'd see the stop and go of the show, as it usually does with other musicals, much like Little Shop of Horrors, if we're going to bring that up, because it has music. Has music, exactly. And then it has dialogue. So I didn't really know on
Rick
that.
Rick Moranis sings in that one, Spencer.
Ooh, okay.
He sings.
See, and this is even more reason. See how excited he gets when I brought it up?
Because it's a great musical.
So for expectations, I really didn't know. But things if I was worried about, the translation from stage to screen sometimes in filming can get lost. Mm. The intricacies of the performances or the impact. Especially in the way that they traditionally usually film stage musicals, it's not given in the most, it doesn't give you the full impact of actually being in the theater.
Yeah.
And so I was a little bit worried about that, and seeing some of the previews, I was like, okay, so we're going to get some sections of this maybe. And then the other thing that I was primarily concerned about was if I had enough tissues.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, In terms of expectations,
I'm being genuine.
In terms of expectations, I had, I think one of the biggest things that I essentially have to piggyback on with Amy, but more in the aspect of the technical perspective, how are they going to create that musical feeling without turning it into just a filmed stage play kind of thing? I didn't want to see just another opportunity where they take something like this and it's like the camera's on stage all the time, the camera's moving through, but you don't get the perspective of the audience. That kind of tends to happen certain times. Like, that's one of the things, if Birdman, the movie with Michael Keaton, if that was a movie that was just completely based on like filming from the stage about a stage play, it probably would have been a little lackluster. But the fact that it moves around, it kind of jots around and gets different perspectives, it's great. That was one of my biggest concerns. My second concern was, because it was going to Disney Plus, what non-Disney
swear
content wasn't going to make it
the swear
into the final cut? And Spencer, you know me, I don't like my films cut.
Yep.
I don't like my films trimmed. And that's one of the biggest frustrations for me. I don't need you laughing.
I'm sorry. I don't like my films trimmed. Like, shoot.
I said cut.
No, you said trimmed.
I said
then
cut.
You said cut. Because Spencer, he said both. He said true. He said both. So it was just really, it was like,
well, it's true.
Don't put it, because don't take this film as originally has been formatted for time.
I've told Amy this. That's one of the hiccups I have about Hulu, because Hulu will have movies that are from channels. And I've told Amy before, I'm like, she goes, oh, this movie's on Hulu, whatever. I'm like, oh, it is? And she goes, yeah. I go, well, what's the icon in the top corner? She goes, bottom corner. Oh, it's the TNT logo, or it's the whatever logo, or the what, this USA logo. I'm like, nope.
I don't even watch those ones.
Well, not anymore.
If it's Turner Classic Movies, I know it's safe. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't have a logo, I know it's safe. Oh, shut your face, you angry old man.
Taking your trimmed movies. taking your trimmed movies. What's wrong with you? But I'm not a big fan of movies that are edited for time or content. If you're going to give me a movie, give me the movie that's intended to be seen by the director. And that was the biggest thing for me, because of the fact that Hamilton is a much more unique and mature, is probably the safe word to use, mature storytelling of Alexander Hamilton. You know, there's certain aspects that are going to be, you know, maybe a little too risque for the Disney audience, which that's the way it was intended. But this is all hearsay, mind you. I haven't seen it prior to the actual seeing it on Disney Plus. But you hear all these things and you're like, okay, I really hope there are things in this musical that are not cut, because swears, story elements, things like that. Like, I don't want
suggestive dancing and skirts.
Well, I mean, if we want to talk about suggestive dancing, we did the review on Dirty Dancing, and that was suggestive enough.
That was more suggestive dancing in Dirty Dancing than there was in Hamilton.
That is true.
Very true. And we know it. We know it to be true.
So, with that said, let's see. Okay, Spencer, first impressions after you finished. Number one.
Wait, weren't you supposed to tell him?
No, that's what I'm saying. This is Spencer's first impressions.
But you said you were going to tell everybody after he gave his, not his impressions, but after he gave his expectations, you were going to tell Spencer he was going to say.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
That's
right
literally
now.
What I'm saying.
He's trying to do it now.
Like, I literally am trying to do it right now. You're not being a very good intern. Follow along. Follow the bouncing ball. Follow along, okay? Follow along. So, Spencer, your first impression after you finished watching this. Number one, there was too much music. Number two, you're frustrated by one of the death scenes. I don't know which one, but I know you were frustrated by one of them. And number three, you didn't understand why there wasn't more King George. Now, did I hit the mark on any of those?
Okay, you hit that mark on one of them.
One out of
only
three.
Only one?
Yes, Spencer reigns supreme.
All right, where did I miss?
Okay, so good job, King Jefferson. George is a dangerous character. I really like him, but I also understand why he's not in the movie, because, you know, it's America's story and he's the king of England.
You know, he's the narrator at the beginning of it, right?
Is he?
He's the one that asks you to please silence your cell phones. This is your king, George the Third.
Yeah, I could see why they didn't, because, like, especially that last scene he's in where he's just, like, dancing along with the music. I'm like, this guy is too much. He's so good, but he's too much for this musical. I don't remember actually being annoyed by any of the deaths in this movie.
Okay.
Which was the other one.
It's interesting because you've usually had an aversion to certain death scenes in movies.
Yeah, normally, but like this one, it's fine.
Interesting. Okay. And the one that I did get right? There was too much music.
I think there was too much music because, like, here's the thing. I was, like, watching it, and then, like, I was watching it on a computer. I accidentally knocked my mouse, and it's like, oh, you've watched 30 minutes. And I'm like, wait, that's it? Like, I've only been 30 minutes into this thing? It feels like it's been an hour. There's 2 hours left in this movie. How? Like, it just seems obnoxiously long. But, like, at the same time, it was good. So I'm very conflicted because, like, it's not that it's bad, but it's also, goodness, so long. Does literally everyone need a song?
Well, in a sing through, yeah.
And to be quite honest, I didn't know it was going to be one of those types of musicals. I thought there was going to be like a song,
dialogue,
song, dialogue.
Called it.
You know, I thought that's the way it was. I didn't know that this was like a nonstop song after song after song after song after song.
Rent.
To where it was very much
Rent.
A surprise. Yes, it's like the stage version of Rent.
Which Spencer saw.
It. You saw the stage version of Rent.
Yeah, Philip was in it.
Oh, well, see?
Yeah.
Speaking of. But was so what I've only seen the movie version of Rent, so was is Rent similar to that in fashion, just song after song after song? Spencer?
I haven't seen the movie version of Rent.
No, the theater version. I've only seen the movie version.
I think so.
You said you saw it,
but I feel
with
like
Philip
there was
in
more
it.
I feel like there was more talking in that than there was in this.
In the actual
in
Rent?
Rent, yeah.
Huh. And I think a lot of the scenes that do, like, in Hamilton, a lot of the songs, a lot of the scenes that actually have dialogue without the musicality aspect to it are really few and far between, and they act more as just little bridges to bring about the next scene or to close out a scene for the next song. Like, one that comes to mind was the conversation that Aaron Burr is trying to have with George Washington, and then George Washington sends him out so that he could talk to Alexander Hamilton, and that whole section is just dialogue with musical backing. However, I don't know if I recognized it until so far into the film slash musical that it was just all music. Like, I think for me it was a really good, interesting blend of each song, one after another after another. I think I was just waiting for a reprieve at one point in time to be like, when are they just going to talk? Wait, when are they just going to talk? What about you, Amy?
First impressions or a comment on your when are they going to talk?
First impressions.
I was moved. Anyway, sorry, my brain went someplace else for a second.
M-O-O-V-E-D. Moved.
Yeah, apparently. I didn't mind that it took me initially by surprise after the opening number that it was a sing through. Not that it's uncomfortable for me, but it did take me by surprise. The length, I wasn't surprised at all, if I'm going to be very honest. It's very few and far between that you come across a stage musical that is less than 2 hours or so. And I think it ended up being like, what, 10
minutes? 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yep.
Well, and considering also, what, 10 minutes of that is credits?
No.
Like at the end?
No. What are you talking about?
There's a bunch of credits.
A lot of credits, but like...
There was a lot of credits. They had the entire opening section, which is...
There was 10 minutes of credits.
Oh, wait. What did I said that right, huh?
I didn't hear what you said.
I said there were 10 minutes of credits.
Oh, okay.
I'm surprised you didn't hear what she said.
I wasn't hearing what she said.
Because I was right, and he didn't want to admit it.
She's the intern. She doesn't know.
But so I was really moved by it. The first time that I usually see something that I have access to that's a musical, and it's well done. That was something that did really take me by surprise, that this wasn't just straight filming from the apron or filming from the back of the house. There's a camera that's actually far upstage in one of the pillars that they use in a couple of the sequences, so you can see what's happening on stage. The shots were so well done that they actually created atmosphere, and it felt more realistic, as if you were experiencing the performance. Some of it I could see in places it took away, where some places it emphasized more. The musicality of all the performers was absolutely wonderful and breathtaking. I loved being able to see better expressions, because sometimes even when you pay $400, you end up in the nosebleed section and there ain't a camera where you can see somebody emote.
Emote.
But yeah, not emote, but emote.
And I think that's one of the great things to kind of begin talking about is the cast, the abilities that were put on display in this particular film. I know one of the people that stands out immediately to myself, as well as I'm sure Spencer, is the performance of David Diggs.
Yeah, yeah.
To see him in anything outside of Blindspotting was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Or Sesame Street. Did you not get to watch him when he did the Rubber Ducky intro for Sesame Street?
No.
Ooh, I got stuff to send you.
But I mean, my first experience seeing David Diggs was in watching Blindspotting, and for that to be like the first impression of somebody like that, it was kind of like seeing someone like shoot as high as they could to the current standard of what they could actually hit within the film market, and then seeing where he came from, kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like when people see all those movies of like where Billy Crystal is like the star of the film, and then you go back and see a lot of the bit parts that he did after the fact. Like, not to say that David Diggs is a bit player in this musical, but he is definitely, I mean, he plays two people in the musical, which was interesting. He plays Lafayette and he plays Thomas Jefferson. But his musicality, I love the word flow that comes off of this man's lips when he speaks, not only when he speaks, but when he sings, when he rhymes, because David Diggs is also a spoken word artist, as well as Rafael Casal, we all know, from Blindspotting. And his ability to show off what we only saw towards, like, in bits and pieces, and then towards the tail end of Blindspotting, seeing him actually, like, really explode in opportunities throughout that musical was really cool, personally. I actually enjoyed David Diggs. He was one of my personal highlights. Was there any personal highlight for you, Amy?
Renee, I cannot remember her middle name. She's got a full one, but it's Golds. Her last name is Goldsberry.
Renee Elise Goldsberry.
There we go.
You mean the one that's in the notes that's in front of you?
I was looking up the other stuff for David Diggs because I remembered seeing him in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, that's where I saw him first too.
Yeah, and I was like, I could have sworn I saw him before I saw Blindspotting. And I was like, oh, and Sesame Street. Yeah. So that was actually kind of fun to see him transition in all the different ways. But with Renee, she was so, it was the first thing I had seen her in. And not just her musicality, but her presence on stage. She always carried this air of Angelica, that she was the character. When she interacts with different people, regardless of if she's speaking or if she's not, she carries that same presence. And it's very hard not to watch her interact with people. And so for the most part, I was noticing on my second viewing that she's kept up on that second balcony, that second tier, when they're doing ensemble numbers, because she's an eye catcher. Wink! Just because of who she is as a person. So she is one... and I have so many. Then that's the bad part. Like, she's wonderful to watch. I think I was telling Eddie about this, that in watching her in the Helpless sequence, she is still acting as though it's a conversation. Like, and she knows what she needs to do to go talk to Alexander for Eliza. And the way that Eliza is singing to her, Philippa Sue is singing to Renee, it's almost like, instead of her, it doesn't feel fake. It doesn't feel like canned. And it's almost as if they're actually having a conversation and she understands what I need, like what she needs to do. And then she goes, takes care of it. So Renee is absolutely, I know why she won the Tony. She's absolutely stunning.
Well, and the one thing that, you know, is very much aware, or you're apparent of, within this particular actress's performance with Renee Elise Goldsberry, is there is a sense of intentionality with, and that's one of the things I think you're going to hear a lot tonight in this episode, is the intentionality of her performance. A lot of people had, prior to this release, had access to the soundtracks, or they've seen the clips or videos, or, you know, handheld, you know, bootleg versions on YouTube or whatever of the musical. But seeing this performance through Disney Plus and getting the opportunity to see the facial expressions, the emoting, mm-hmm. as Amy so well put it, the emoting of these performers, one of the great things you recognize right away is the intentionality of a lot of her performance in the things that she's saying. Yes, you hear the words, but when you see her face, you recognize, like, the anguish that she's trying to say. You recognize the underlying sense of hurt, but recognizing duty. Like, there is so much intentionality behind her eyes, as well as Chris Jackson, who plays George Washington.
Yes.
Chris Jackson, yes. is a phenomenal performer. I'm not too sure in terms of his rhyming ability or his rapping ability, it's not really the case, because when Chris Jackson, every time Chris Jackson came into the forefront of the stage, he just was so pronounced. Like, he was there. You saw his presence. You knew he had the authority, and he was just, he embodied George Washington in the musical. And much like Chris Jackson, Renee Elise Goldsberry was very intentional in every effort that she did while doing the performances, while doing everything from the what is the scene where it rewinds,
which is Satisfied, which was one of the numbers that is for presence in shooting, the way that it was designed on stage in choreography, everything is reversed. So they utilize the tables, because the tables both in there, they can go in opposite directions, and the choreography literally is backwards. She faces forwards almost the entire number, and does everything in reverse from the previous song and from the previous scene. Yeah. And so it is one of those ones that you're just like, dang, girl.
Yeah.
Shoot, what the heck?
But in that scene, when everything rewinds, one of the great things is that her words emphasize her actions emphasize the words that are taking place in that situation. And you recognize the intentionality of everything she is doing in those scenes. And it's really, really profound. You have to give it to these two particular actors for Goldsberry and Jackson, because as their performances, yes, Renee like raps, and she is wow. That performance she does with the is it the Skylar Sisters song?
Skylar's.
The Skylar's?
The Skylar Sisters, yeah. Looking for a mind at work. That one.
Yeah, well, isn't that the one where she raps really well in?
Satisfied is where she raps, but she does a little bit of that introduction in Skylar Sisters where it's...
Okay. Yeah, but she's phenomenal at that as well. And like Chris Jackson as well, same thing. He's very pronounced. He's very intentional. His face is very expressionable. Like, it's a very expressive. You can see it. And interestingly enough, and I hope nobody takes this in the wrong way, Chris Jackson's face does what, what's his name? Don't tell me, I'm going to figure it out. Brian D'Arcy James.
Yep. Shrek.
What his face was doing as Shrek, in terms of like the eyebrows and the movements of the cheeks and the wide eye or the concerned furrow brow, like being on stage, that has to be noticeable. It can't be just like a subtle thing. You have to be able to make that emotion still subtle, yet still visible to everybody all the way in the back. And Chris Jackson did that in droves. And so, like, kudos to him. What about you, Spence? Was there anybody who in the cast that you thought was a standout?
You already know. It's King George. He's my favorite character.
Jonathan Groff. No,
but what about him, though?
I think it's the level of...
Or was it just the hat?
What?
Did you just like the hat?
It's the walk.
Did you just like
that
the hat?
That walk was so smooth and so clean.
But that hat looked ridiculous. Like, it looks... He looked so hot. Like, literally. I don't know how he wasn't just sweating up a storm. It's a combination of being able to do that walk with all that clothes. Very like lack of emoting sometimes, like when that stage person walks up to him to whisper that John Adams is president, and like he just doesn't respond with a facial expression when she laughs at it. Like just his whole demeanor of being above everything is really great to see. I really like it.
Now we do have to address the very obvious wet aspect of his performance.
The Spittlegate.
Why is that a gate?
I'm just calling it as a gate.
Well, because
controversy.
So right now it's all over certain social platforms like TikTok, and YouTube has videos of it as well, of Jonathan Groff really getting into the character and doing the whole like, you know, spittle coming out. Did you see that particular scene, Spencer?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, he liked it.
No, I didn't say that. What? I just said I saw it.
Well, our intern here doesn't know how to not talk when someone's talking, so I'm sorry, Spencer. I was trying to hear you, and she said, oh, he liked it when we were talking. I do apologize. Were you aware that it's now like one of those little social media pariahs, the Spittlegate?
I did not. You're bringing this very interesting news to my attention. So,
I'm glad we could, you know, I mean, we do report a lot of that very, very important stuff.
Yeah.
You
know, who cares? As long as he's not spitting on a person, that's fine.
Well, how do you know?
Well, Alex might have gotten it in the face. And Alex is the conductor that was down in the pit that was right there.
That's unfortunate.
But I think,
nice juicy loogie just right there.
But I think, oh my goodness, I think it actually added. So the original King George that also subbed in when Jonathan Groff wasn't there was one Brian D'Arcy James, which we talked about from Shrek. So he originated it. But the role really embodies the, I think Jonathan does a great job, even with the spittle, the utter madness of King George III. Because if you're watching all the nuances, not just the walk, but he talks about, he did an interview with Stephen Colbert, and Stephen Colbert is like, your walk is amazing. And apparently, like, Beyonce loved his walk. And he explains that the crown that he wears and everything else is so heavy that he actually had to learn the proper posture in the way so he would not hurt himself. But it gave this kind of regal flow and glide across the floor, which makes him look even more like crazy. Like, it's so clean, it's just weird. And then whenever he's... It's so clean, it's weird.
But then
if you watch in parts of his song, his first song, You'll Be Back, he slowly, like, he'll be singing, and then you can watch him slowly make a fist. And it's not like a resting fist. It's like, I'm going to punch you fist. And then... the slow ticks with his hands, where you can see it's like somebody who is slowly losing their mind, and you, because of the steady cam, because of being zoomed in, were able to see all of those little intricate details that make him look so manic. And it's one of the reasons why he is a favorite. So when it's like, yes, it's Spittlegate, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's spitting, I'm like, King George went crazy. That wasn't a joke. And
so did Jonathan Groff.
Well, Jonathan Groff is Jonathan Groff. I mean, he's what's his face in Frozen. Like, they only let him sing in the second movie.
And he's Kristoff.
Thank you. I don't remember. I was going to call him Sven.
Kristoff. Interesting.
Yeah.
He also was in Glee.
Nobody cares.
Spring Awakening.
But here's the thing. All jokes aside.
There's jokes?
We've just given a whole bunch of them right now.
I didn't take that as a joke.
Listen, Spittlegate, take it easy over there, okay?
What?
But all jokes aside, you have to appreciate the level of commitment Jonathan Groff had for his role and for the character of King George. And mind you, whether or not if it was intentional to connect to the whole madness of King George, or whether or not it was just, you know, Jonathan Groff just had a really, really moist mouth when he was doing that scene, or, you know, whatever it may be, the fact remains, he did it. It added to the ludicrousness of King George in those scenes. Because, to be quite honest, at certain points, I was like, you know, if King George would have just taken back control the way this seems, everything would have been okay. But then you get to the elements where he starts acting a little bit more loopy, and you're like, oh yeah, this man was not fit. He needed to go away. And you see it as everything progresses, and you see his mindset, and you see how the entirety of the musical itself shows that decline of his mental
stability,
mental stability and acuity. And it's great. Jonathan Groff does a fantastic job. And I'm actually interested in seeing the other two. Brian D'Arcy James is one. And then there's another one.
He's in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah. But there's another gentleman who plays it as well. I'm interested in seeing the three of those performances compared to each other. Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting. But nevertheless, obviously, as well as these actors and actresses did in the musical, I keep wanting to say film, but it's not just a film.
It's a film musical.
Obviously, you gotta give props where props are due. And those are like the two top dogs of this particular musical. You have Lin-Manuel Miranda and Leslie Odom Jr.
Yes.
Lin-Manuel, to be quite frank, the man who wrote all the music in this musical.
Over 20,000 words were written for this musical.
And I was thinking about it. Does that include the actual dialogue in between? Because mind you, I mean, that's maybe accounting to like 100 words additional. But I'm just wondering if that includes any of that as well, or if it's just...
In his music? No, I assume that it's everything.
Okay.
That's what when I was looking it up, it had said that it was everything.
Which... Amy had mentioned this before, that the fact that there are 20,000 words Over 20,000 words in this musical, which had me wondering. I'm like, well, if that's the case, like, where do other movies stack up to that, you know? Mm-hmm. And actually looking at a lot of them, the top 15 films with the most dialogue, they start at like 32,000 words and then move up, obviously, from number 15 to one. The least amount in that top 15 is 32,000 words, close to 33, and that's 1999's Dogma, going all the way up to,
I love Dogma.
Oh, Kevin Smith's Sorry. Dogma.
But, it's like my favorite Kevin Smith movie.
But then you have 1995's Casino taking the top spot at 67,678 words in the entirety of the film. So you obviously this musical kind of sits at the top, somewhere in that realm, in terms of words per the entirety of it. Which obviously I think you can attribute that to a lot of the raps in the film, a lot of the musical moments that require that, you know, rhyming ability, that compacting a lot of stanzas within each song and so forth. But just nevertheless, one person wrote all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. I mean, 20,000 words for a musical, for it to work in that chronological order from beginning to end. That's talent. That is the musicality of Lin-Manuel, which is why, you know, kudos to the man who has made it from the stage theater to working in film and creating the things that he's continuing to create all the way up to, I believe next year is when they are going to release In the Heights.
Yeah, I got pushed back a year.
It was supposed to be this year.
Yep.
So next year, 2021. Oh, that's right. 2021 in like May or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's supposed to be. It's released right on the cusp of summer. So it could be a summer blockbuster. Oh,
yeah. But the fact remains is that Lin-Manuel is an extremely incredible wordsmith as well as musical genius. I mean, it's just safe to say he's a musical genius. And then you have the smooth and wonderful musicality of Leslie Odom Jr. in the role of Aaron Burr in this film / musical. Leslie Odom Jr. is just phenomenal. Like, outside of even Broadway, I've heard him in just like songs and things like that he's done, jazz and some stuff he's done. And he's just a great singer altogether.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he did everything he was doing in this, to be quite honest, I don't know if they utilized him as best to his abilities as possible. I felt like the songs that he got to be a part, it seemed like the minimalistic amount of time put in for Leslie Odom to be in the film, or at least to have the opportunities to sing, I felt like I could have won. I actually wanted more of Leslie Odom Jr.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know.
Then you need to watch Smash.
Well, we're not talking about Smash. We're talking about Hamilton.
That's part of that musicality. Leslie Odom Jr. I first was aware of him in 2008 with Once on This Island. He played Agua, the god of water.
Agua?
Agua.
Agua.
Spanish
for water.
A-G-W-E, but yeah. Which that one doesn't have a lot of singing, but it's very... It's an earthier, usually it's more of a baritone. So it's a second tenor baritone. It's a little bit deeper. When he is a tenor, like listening to Leslie Odom Jr., he's more of a tenor. But my first real exposure in knowing who he was and recognizing him was in Smash, which is a musical. So it's a TV show about a musical. And he sings like predominantly through almost all of the episodes. He's a lead role. It's like 23 episodes or so where he is singing, and at least every other episode.
And mind you, what I'm saying, it's not an attack on the actual musical itself. I like Leslie Odom Jr.'s voice. I like his sound. I like that he's kind of the driving narrative, the narrator, if you will, for the musical, because he does all the in-betweens for the transitions for time. But it's not always him flexing that musicality. And that's I mean, have any of you guys ever heard any of his albums? He did a Christmas album not that long ago. And his vocals, he's got a great range. And I was hoping, I mean, mind you, this is just me, but I was hoping to really hear that like range open up and really flex in this particular musical. I didn't, I'm not aware of what all he was capable of, not to mention, or not in the, in the musical. I wasn't aware, but I also knew that there were certain elements of the musical that was explicitly removed from the soundtrack so that people could still go to the theater to go see the stage play of it, which is smart. So I was hoping maybe there was something really expressive and something really, you know, fundamentally him in the musical.
There was.
Which was?
Well, to so vocally, because I'd said, you know, I'd listened to the album before when it came out. When he does The Room Where It Happens, if you're watching the small revelations that he has in The Room Where It Happens, they are so wonderful to see as a character for character growth. It's not just the look on his face. So he's transitioning from one section of growth in his character to a new one. So we see it in The Room Where It Happens in Wait For It. He has, you see him emboldened with Dear Theodosia. You see it too. That's one of probably the, not the most underrated, but one of the sweetest kind of duets that happens in the musical. For the two gentlemen where it's, you know, the birth of their children. So seeing that is really great. But if you wanted to expect more from, I think this is actually a better opportunity for you to go, I really liked him in Hamilton. What else has he done? What else can
I watch? Oh, no doubt. No.
And that's the space to explore range, because this.
And mind you, this is not, like I said, his role in Hamilton was great. I loved his role. I think he was an excellent Aaron Burr. Mm-hmm. I think for the ability of someone like Leslie Odom Jr., I felt like there should have been, I don't know. I just wish there was more. And that's really just the personal preference. Yes, he did Wait For It on his own. And what was the other one he did? He did
Room Where It Happens.
No, he does that with other people.
Oh, you're talking about him as a solo.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a ton of other opportunities for other people. And mind you, it looks like that he only has one opportunity really for himself. And I think that's one of the minor things where I wish there was another opportunity where he really, really like kind of put his foot to the pedal and kind of gave it some gas a bit more. Because, like I said, we get a lot of great opportunities from Lin-Manuel. We get a lot of great opportunities from David Diggs, Philippa So.
You don't get solo songs. You get What Did I Miss when he becomes Jefferson for David.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
but that's an opportunity for him. But I mean, it's a colorful way to introduce Thomas Jefferson, and it's very memorable. You know, you'll get Jonathan Groff's constant, you know, You'll Be Back. You get The Satisfied, the one that we talked about earlier, with Goldsberry.
Burn with Philippa.
There's a lot of great opportunities outside of, I don't know. I mean, mind you, that's just my own personal observation. What do you think, Spencer? Am I losing my mind here, or do you think, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I always think you're losing your mind, Eddie.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
You asked him that question in particular, if he but believes you're losing your rhetorical. Mind or not.
Go ahead.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, so you're talking about like
Leslie Odom Jr.
Like he had enough to showcase himself. Like this is like honestly the first thing I've seen a lot of these people in. So I'm not really sure what people can do. Like besides like David Diggs and Lin-Manuel, I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head that I know I've seen in something else. So a lot of it is just being kind of introduced. Oh, except for that one guy who's going to be in The Heights next year. I've seen him in something.
Anthony
else.
Ramos.
Yes, that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, from the other performers, it was kind of just like, I'm getting to know you because I have no idea who any of these people are for the most part. Yeah.
And the thing is, like Leslie Odom Jr. has been in the music industry for almost a decade and a half. He has had several different albums. He is very known for his musicality. And it just, for me, it seems like this was a slight missed opportunity to to build something else within this particular character. I mean, mind you, I don't know what, you know, him and, you know, and Lynn's, you know, conversation were in terms of in the agreement of, oh, well, you know, when we bring you on, when you do this role, you know, we want you to do X, Y, and Z and this, this, and that. No, actually, let's squeeze it back to I don't know if that may have been a conversation, but personally, I really like Leslie Odom Jr. And I really think that should have been an opportunity to kind of expand his, you know, opportunities to really sing, I guess. I mean, you know, there's small opportunities here and there, but nothing that really shouts his song.
But is this show his show?
Is it anybody's show in
well,
this?
That's it's that's called Hamilton, so obviously the answer is yes.
Yes, but as... Thank you, Captain Obvious.
You're
the one whose show is this. It's in the title of the show.
But the idea of the show is not just about one particular person. It's about the ability of someone going beyond the understanding of, with everything else against them, this is what they can achieve through the American dream, kind of, sort of.
You mean
no,
which is exactly
it's about
what
Alexander Hamilton. What are you talking about?
And even to what Eddie said, that is explored and shown with Burr. There's nobody in here that is like soaking in solo songs more than one, which is usually traditional of musicals, unless it is like a one man show. It's ensemble pieces, and this is designed to give everybody that opportunity to sing. So if you're talking about what can be achieved through the American dream, not just with Alexander Hamilton, but with Burr, it takes the ensemble to get you to those points to do that. So even The Room Where It Happened, where he is the predominant lead on that song, he still is interacting with the ensemble on purpose. Like, it's part of that natural growth. We don't have, like, even for the finale with Eliza, we don't have a whole bunch of Eliza by herself songs aside from Burn. Helpless, she's got the backing of the rest of the ladies' ensemble. Like, that's on purpose. Nobody is by themselves for more than one song on purpose.
I don't know. It seems like a missed opportunity for me. And hey, I'm entitled to my opinion. And apparently Spencer is entitled to his. Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know why we're taking opinions on who the show's about, because it's in the title.
No,
of the
it's
show.
Not. No, it obviously, yes. It's about the general consensus is yes, it's about Hamilton. But
the general consensus.
General consensus.
Why is the entire? Why is this a question?
Because it's more than just about one man. That's what I'm trying to get you to
so
understand.
So then, why are you pushing for it to be more about Leslie Odom Jr. as Leslie Odom Jr.?
Because I'm not.
You gave stink face because you wanted more Leslie Odom Jr. and felt that he wasn't stretched or pushed enough.
He wasn't
enough.
Utilized as best as he could. Yeah, and I'm entitled to that thought. And mind you, going back to Spencer's really interesting perspective, yes, the name of the musical is Hamilton, but it's not just about Alexander Hamilton. The idea that the musical has goes beyond just one person. You do understand that.
Yes,
the whole
I
idea
understand
of, you know,
that.
Immigrants,
I watched
we
it,
get
Eddie.
The job
I understand
done.
That.
I don't know if you watched it. To be honest, I thought you were going to say you took a nap in between,
no.
To be quite frank.
That's why you have the intermission button.
Look, he's sad that he didn't
know what it's sad.
He's like, no.
I actually started watching it a second time because I don't know. There was something about watching this where I felt like, have you ever just been like actively talking to someone and you're actually listening, but you don't know what they're talking about at all? Like, that's
why I turn on captions. I turn on captions for the exact same purpose.
So I turned them on too. I still felt lost.
The musical went right over your head, is what you're saying?
No, there was like parts where songs were talking, and I'm like, wait, who are we talking about right now? Like, I felt lost. So I started after I watched it. I started watching it again because I was like, maybe I just missed a
better
lot.
Better opportunities to understand, but also
then
if we were
it turns like a 3-hour movie into a 6-hour movie if I have to watch it twice.
I can't do that. Don't do that.
Make him cough.
That was funny, but all current thoughts aside, There is an interesting development that is occurring with...
Not Spittlegate.
No, not Spittlegate. But with the with a lot of people, in terms of the interpretation of that final final scene where Eliza is doing her song in regards to...
Who lives, who dies, yeah. Who tells your story?
That one. as she's talking about the things that she did to continue on Alexander's legacy and, you know, opening up the orphanage and doing X, Y, and Z and so forth and so forth. And one of the big conversation pieces that has actually been circulating social media as well as certain outlets and trying to find interpretations is what's known as the gasp, which another instance where it was not included in the soundtrack that was released for the musical. And that's interesting because that was something that was intentionally left out. So that way, when people went to go visit the actual musical, when they went to go see it, they would experience it firsthand. And now that it's on, you know, Disney Plus, you know, you can experience everything in its fullness, including the parts that were omitted from the soundtrack. And the gasp is in that final song where Eliza is singing and she's mentioning about all the things that she's done, and she's, you know, she did it to help, you know, continue on Alexander's legacy, and she's hoping that people will remember it and will remember him, and for people to continue to tell his story, and whose story are they going to continue to tell, and so forth and so forth. And so there's in that final, actually literally in the final minute of that scene, Alexander, who is off to the side, you know, escorts her to once, or walks by her, sees her, escorts her like in a little half circle, then takes her right to the front of the stage, and which she looks out at the theater, she looks out at the audience, she looks up a bit, and then she does this tearful gasp, and then the lights go down, and that's the end of the musical. Now that people have seen it, there's a lot of people who are trying to interpret. Sorry, I can't speak in today.
Interpretate sounds good.
Interpret that final gasp and what it truly means for not just the cast, but even for fans of the musical, even for people who went to go see it, and what it means to them. And it's interesting. I've been having conversations with a few people from Amy. I mentioned it to Spencer. I even had a conversation with Amy's oldest daughter, because she is a huge Hamilton fan. And
She cried. It was great. This child can sing things forwards and backwards from Hamilton. And she straight up sat down with me when she was watching it, and she was just like tears streaming. Mind you, this is not the first Broadway show that she's seen, because I had the opportunity to take her to the community center theater where the Broadway touring shows would come through. To see one before it made its Broadway, off-Broadway, so The Lightning Thief, but also Dear Evan Hansen. And she knew the songs forwards and backwards for Dear Evan Hansen, but she cried not once. Mm. Not once.
So the idea of this part is, I'm wondering, you guys obviously have seen the musical. What is your guys' interpretation? Because there's a lot of interpretations out there of what that gasp means. And I'm looking at Spencer, and Spencer's already laughing because I don't know why. I don't know if he's having audio troubles.
It's
or if
fine.
He's just...
Me and Amy had a moment.
You okay? Sure.
Yep, we got them moments.
Well, in terms of what the gasp means and how you interpreted it, because there's several different people out there who are interpreting it one way, some who are interpreting it another way. Lin-Manuel Miranda himself has literally gone on social media and says, you know, oh, I don't know about all these, but his interpretation is the gasp is a gasp is a gasp. That's literally all he said.
What the heck does that mean? That's, you might as well not have even answered.
Exactly.
That's, yes.
Well, people were blowing him up about it too.
She gasped. Shocker. Like,
what? So, I like it.
So I don't know.
Spencer gets first swing at this because, well, I have a cornucopia of ideas.
Okay, Spencer, the intern is saying that you have to go first.
I have information.
Okay, well, I think she died and was reunited with her son.
Aww.
Okay.
Because all right, like all right. The last thing she was doing was like moving around with like Hamilton when he was already dead. So it kind of makes sense to me.
That she was reunited with her son.
Mm-hmm.
Died and obviously reunited with her son.
Yeah, because, you know, the death of her her son really shook both of them. So that seems like the person who, after re-seeing, like, Hamilton again, she would have probably the most shock seeing.
Hmm. Okay. I've read on a few different ones. I think, honestly, the one that's resonating with me the most, just because knowing how outside the fourth wall Lynn works, and actually, it's the interpretation that Amy's daughter gave us, was I believe Lynn steps outside of the role of Alexander, takes essentially, so to speak, Eliza to the front of the stage to show her everybody who is listening, who is carrying the story, and who will take the story. And it's an overwhelming, like, feeling. It's the recognition that his story will continue on. And mind you, Lynn, that was actually the theory that was sent to Lynn, where he's like, no, that's not it. But, you know, here's my interpretation. The gasp is a gasp, whatever. And mind you, I know that it's been, you know, debunked by the man himself, but there's still a director, and the director still has kind of the final say in what, how he wants certain things to go. And I feel like that's kind of where that gasp stems from personally. But who knows, you know, what about you, Fury of the Small?
So, literally about 2 days ago, Thomas Kail, who is the director for Hamilton, excuse me, he came out in an interview and explained that, when they were still off Broadway, he talked to, Philippa, they call her Pippa. They were backstage. They were talking about some way to finish the show. And he was looking for a way for the lyrics and the story to resolve itself, because that's the who lives, who dies, who tells your story is consistently the running thread, the thread of legacy underneath the show itself. So he said he talked to her and she had decided, she tried a few things and then she just decided on a gasp. Now, she's the only one who truly knows what it means to her. And there's multiple other Elizas that have come through and their interpretation of the gasp will be different. So once, you know, Philippa decides to let us in, then we'll know what her original purpose of it was. But Lynn did not have kind of like, he didn't write it into the script. Mm. And Thomas came out and said that it means something to her in particular. So I do love the idea that this is not just Alexander's story, it's hers as well, because of the work that she did to continue and fund his legacy, interviewing all the people that fought with him, opening the orphanage, speaking out against slavery. She did so much work to ensure that her husband's legacy lived on, but in turn hers did as well. So I'm very much for that. The gasp was realizing and recognizing that the impact of the legacy was still being passed on. But until Philippa kind of lets us know why she chose a gasp to finish out the show, it's kind of one of those mysteries that's shrouded in like...
Mystery?
Mystery. Mystery shrouded in mystery.
It's a mystery.
It's
shrouded
an enigma
in...
wrapped in an enigma wrapped in an 18th century dress. Like, we won't know. And so part of it, someone's like, she saw God. She turns around, she realizes and sees all the people that are behind her. You know, it's that death moment. There's so many. And I'll wait quietly and patiently until Pippa decides to tell us.
And you know what the sad thing about that is?
I'll wait.
The gasp is going to become this much larger talked about thing to the point to where it's going to become bigger than the actual answer itself. And then the answer is not going to be given for the fact that the search for the answer became bigger than the actual answer itself. And they're not going to tell us. I know it. And I'm like, that hurts now, because I'm like, I'm not going to find out what the heck the gasp means. And I blame Spencer, but it's okay.
You can't blame Spencer. He's not Philippa Sue. Leave him alone.
I am not Philippa Sue.
You don't know that? I mean, you could be anybody. This is America.
What?
Don't catch him slipping.
Oh, my goodness. This is just another reason for somebody to write a Dear Philippa Sue letter. I am.
That sounded like the beginning of a Dr. Seuss book.
Dear Philippa Sue. Hello.
I love it when you play a kazoo.
Questions a day. Hope you can stay.
All right.
Tell me, what will I do? I don't rhyme on purpose. This is why they did not hire me for Hamilton.
Thank God. So wrapping up this conversation, were there any standout moments or any concerns or any issues with the musical that anybody have? Spencer?
No. You need a moment? I didn't have any issues with the musical.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Any standout moments for you? Anything that really kind of transcended that whole, you know, awe moment?
The gasp?
No, aside from the gasp.
I think he's talking about revelations as a whole of the show and how it made you feel.
Was there any moment that blew your mind, Spence? Was there any moment that blew your mind?
No.
Okay.
No, it's cool.
You, Amy? Was there any standout moment for you or concern or issue?
No issues. It created an expectation now for filming Broadway and stage productions that I don't know if it has raised the bar and I'm going to be yelling at Broadway HD a whole bunch or what. But for outstanding moments, there are, and I had started a second watching that... the identity of the character that is quote unquote the bullet, which people have talked about too as well, that one of the ensemble, she actually comes forward and is in the primary players when they take the bow. She's one of the primary players that takes the bow from the ensemble, and she's recognized as the bullet, as death. The gradual increase of her presence and closeness to Alexander Hamilton is really kind of cool to watch. And then mad props and shout outs to Jasmine. Jasmine Jones, who's also in Blindspotting. Hey.
Jasmine Cepha Jones.
Where she is not a bit part in any way, shape, or form. And even though she's Aunt Peggy, I love that she carries and supports the multiple characters she plays, as well as the other two leading women that she's surrounded with. Like, it's, she doesn't get enough props for Aunt Peggy.
Well, she does great as Peggy, as well as Maria Reynolds. And then for that to essentially lead to the opportunities that was with Blindspotting. I mean, her performance in Blindspotting was great as well. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And you know, she had more speaking opportunities in Blindspotting. So the woman can act. And, you know, carry, you know, dialogue as well. So it's great to see, like I said, with Daveed Diggs, for me, seeing where she came from and where she's, you know, going towards and everything else after the fact. One of the standout moments for me, I really do have to say, is the scene where you see Anthony Ramos's character.
Lawrence. John Lawrence.
Where you see his... where he's died and Alexander Hamilton gets the letter from his father. And it's a very touching scene. And I've only heard that song. I've never actually seen the performance of itself, but the song itself.
How did you hear the song? Because it's not on the album on purpose.
No, I heard the song from the musical itself.
Yeah, it's only in the musical. It's not in the album.
No, that's what I'm saying. I've only heard the song.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It sounded weird.
But on second viewing, I saw the full thing of it, the whole scene, and to see how it works in tandem together with the presence of John Lawrence and Alexander Hamilton, it took me a second viewing to really encapsulate both what John Lawrence is doing in that role as well as what Alexander Hamilton, as well as Eliza, they're all doing in that scene. And it's actually a wonderful and masterful scene, as well as the technicality behind Philip Hamilton's duel. That the way they shot that and the way the scene works out and the way the whole stage works is so technically like genius. And the way, you know, when he does the turnaround and he gets shot and the floor is still moving, like he's moving in slow motion after he got shot. It's just, it's so technically sound and perfect that, not that I'm glorifying a death scene, but the scene itself is just so well done. And I'm wondering if that translates as well as somebody from, you know, in the audience. You know, you gonna say something, Spence?
No, but that stage was actually very impressive. Like, watching people just like be okay with the whole stage moving one direction and another direction sometimes, I just don't know how they didn't get dizzy. But
you know, I agree. I was in the same boat. I'm like, man, so much spinning and turning and changing, I would get sick.
Especially but, like during what was it, that dancing scene with like, I don't remember which one it was, but where like people are spinning and the stage is spinning and like everyone is spinning, like that just seems like too much to be on there.
Well, and there were certain scenes where they were spinning in opposite directions, and it's like, how are these people not hitting each other? Like,
staging,
I would be like,
and choreography,
whatever. Yeah, it is,
like, that's really amazing. Though
you keep your magical riddles
over. That's basically
in a heartbeat. I am so uncoordinated.
Noted. He needs dance classes and to learn how to spot so he won't get dizzy. Understood. We'll take you to children's ballet.
Hey, whatever.
Spencer and I will put in for the kitty. We'll make sure you get the money for ballet. We'll put you in a pair of tights. You can go do that thing and learn how to spot, because that's actually how you reduce your dizziness.
Does that mean you know how?
I'm terrible at it, but I can.
So you don't know how?
No, I'm
okay,
terrible
just wanted
at
to make
spotting.
Sure.
Do you even?
But wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. We're going to talk about, obviously, if the musical passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy. Amy, does the musical slash film pass or fail, and how many monocles out of five?
It totally does pass.
Okay.
It totally does pass. And as much as he didn't have a monocle in this because he had bifocals, I'm going to give it him 5 out of 5 for musical movies, film musicals.
Musical movie film
no,
musicals.
No. So film musicals are different than musical movies. We'll have that talk
I know
later.
What
off, yeah.
I know what the difference is.
So like film musical. Too. See, and Spencer's like, yeah, I got you. Amy. Like,
we are the film philosophers. It's okay. Spencer, what about you? Does it pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Okay, so this movie passes for me. It's it's
that's
very
good.
Well done.
Uh huh. Be honest, it's okay.
It's okay. It's only got a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, a 90% on Metacritic, and a 9.something out of 10 for average users.
All right, here's the thing. This movie is good. It's a great movie. Like, it's just phenomenal on multiple levels. I don't like this movie, though.
Hey?
It's not for me. And I understand.
No,
like, this is actually really weird for me, being after this movie, because, like, I understand this movie is objectively very good, but I don't like it, and it's one of those things where it didn't resonate with me, and it's not for me, but I would still recommend it. And this is kind of like the first movie I've ever seen where I'd recommend it to people but not want to watch it myself again.
Well, it's like all those Martin Scorsese films or Oliver Stone films. They're good films, but they're only good to watch them the one time, and then you don't see them really ever again. And they're like, hey, do you know a good, this kind of movie? Oh yeah, Oliver Stone did that one film. I didn't, you know, I won't see it again, but you know,
if you want an experience,
if you want to experience it, you can check it out.
But that's well said. I mean, that doesn't make you a bad person or against
it
musicals.
Does.
No, it doesn't. Because it's the same thing. You're taking your steps into musicals. So how many monocles would you prescribe to your, I like it, but not enough to watch it again? Type of motif.
Be honest.
It's okay. I ain't gonna judge you like that. He's over there in the corner.
Don't look at me.
He's angry.
I knew you were getting to this point. It's okay.
I can't believe I'm doing this too. I'm gonna give it a 4 because it was still pretty good.
Okay. Even I would have thought you would have given it like a 3 or something.
No, like, because, like, the music is good. Like, the choreography with the insane moving stage is great. Like, there's so many things about this movie that are excellent. I don't want to watch it again.
There you go. For me, the film passes. My gosh. The film passes for me. Definitely has that proper story structure. It really is well put together. It's chronological. It really hits all the technical aspects. The film itself, the audio is great. The music is wonderful. It's really clean cut. Amy's daughter said the music is a simple melody or tune that can set a scene really well. And, you know, for instance, like things like in Stay Alive, the beats of the songs, they time really well with the heartbeats of Philip as he passes. And it's really strong and powerful. And you have to give credit to where credit is due. The music is phenomenal. With that said,
hated it.
I didn't hate it. But I do agree with Spencer. This is like when people go and see like The Boy with the Striped Pajamas or Schindler's List or those movies that you experience once and you're like, this was such a great movie. I have no intention on seeing it again. I will listen to the music from time to time. But in terms of re-experiencing this whole thing once more, I don't know if I'm willing to do that again, to put myself through 2 hours and 30, 40 minutes. But like I said, it definitely hit all the points of like, hey, you know, the musicality on point, the performances astounding, the stage technical performance incredible. You know, you give credit to where credit is due, and our intern is raising her hand like she's a second grader. What is it?
Well, you were speaking, and I was just going to ask if the reason why that you guys like it, experience it, but don't want to experience it again is because of the ease of access you have to it.
No. I would go and pay...
That was also a Spencer question, too.
I would go and pay to see Blindspotting at least 5 times a day for 5 days straight, if need be. There are movies that I'm willing to put, even if the ease of access is not as accessible.
It was just a query. Calm down. Don't get heated at me.
I'm not. I'm stating the fact that it is not a movie. It has nothing to do with ease of access.
Don't modulate the key and then not debate with me. How many monocles?
So, Spencer,
how many monocles?
The monocles I'm going to give it is a 3.5 out of 5. I think it definitely excels at a lot of points. There's still my one little hiccup with Leslie Odom Jr., but I do get... conversation we had, don't want to go through it again. Hamilton, I get it, Spencer. But the bottom line is, I think it's definitely a niche musical. It definitely holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts, just not mine to that extent to where I would choose to willingly put myself through that again. Not that it's bad, it's just there's a lot in it that I just was like, okay, that's cool, great, you know, awesome. Maybe a part of that is due to that being hyped like crazy. Maybe it was probably due to how many people were already spouting and going on about it in terms of it being like the greatest musical since, you know, sliced bread. I don't know. But bottom line is, it was a great musical, great performance. I'm glad I got to see it the one time.
Good.
Yeah.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on our Twitter and Instagram page at filmlosophy101. I swear my mouth works, just today it's just not there and it's not having it.
It'll never be satisfied.
We got a great show coming up next week. You do not want to miss it. We have two special guests that you... are going to be interested in hearing their opinions. And I know me and Spencer are really excited to talk about it. So you're going to have to stay tuned to check it out.
Yay!
But from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.